So we'll keep it like this when the meeting starts.
I hear
Randy
in the ceiling. Maybe it's working slightly. So the fact that we leave the doors open for ventilation. Honourable members, we have a National Development Agency this morning to report to us on the end of the year under review, which is 2010-2011, the annual report. We received an apology from the minister that she won't be able to attend the following committee meeting due to an October month event in Durban, KZN. And Honourable Magagula, he has an urgent personal matter to attend back home. And then the DG has to attend, is addressing a conference today on Asian Action, the National Conference of Asian Action. And then Honourable Member Zahaba will be late. Now, in terms of the agenda, Honourable Members, the only thing is the National Development Agency's annual report. Is there anything else? Just to say to you that the Ugandan delegation has cancelled it, has postponed the trip. We were informed by international relations, and they will give us a new date when we meet them again. So we were supposed to meet them on the 22nd of October. So we won't be able to. The meeting's been cancelled for that date. Chairman of the board and the CEO of the NDA, Mrs. Who's going to do the presentation? Do you have any other members of the board here today? We'll introduce them first, and also the members of the team of the NDA, and then we'll proceed with the presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. To introduce the team, Professor Ewang is member of the Executive Committee, Chief Finance Officer, Mr. Zwane, Mr. Mohano, who heads up our programs, the CEO, you know. We are accompanied by the Deputy Minister, Ms. Nduli, and also supported by Mr. Shezi from the Department and advisor to the Minister. Our board member, Aunt Bibi Khan, she's here with us, a veteran, and the company secretary, Ms. Matepo Mubeng. We are also supported by Mr. Masiliana from the department and our HR executive, Mr. Luwake. So I would like to thank you very much for welcoming us, and maybe from my desk, from a governance point of view, just to say to Parliament that in a significant development after the year end was that we lost one of our fellow board members who was buried this past weekend, Ms. Louise Mulema. So, yeah, that's a significant development. We wish may her soul rest in peace. And on that note, I would like to hand over to the CEO to proceed with the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Board Members and colleagues. I will go through the presentation, and towards the end I will hand over to Mr. Zwane, the Chief Financial Officer, to deal with the financials. The presentation will cover very briefly five areas: the introduction, the and then we will zoom into the key achievements of the year under review, and then we'll deal with the financial report, and we will touch on challenges, and then we conclude. Just as a background and introduction, for us, this is this report really marks a very important event in the history of the National Development Agency, because indeed it coincides with our 10th anniversary. We are completing 10 years since this organization was formed, the NDA. And we pride ourselves in achieving an unqualified audit report. And we just want to mention that for the fifth consecutive year. Reflecting on the year under review, our interventions made it possible, despite the challenge around the cuts or the fiscal constraints. I will soon reflect to you on how our budget was reduced. But despite that, we have managed to do the best to ensure that we have an increasing number of poor people becoming self-reliant and contributing towards building sustainable rural communities. In terms of the year under review, our focus areas have been the following. One, funding rural development to achieve sustainable livelihoods. And you'll notice that it, this covers quite a number of areas because it is in the rural areas where there are serious challenges, not that in the urban areas there are not, but you would agree with us that rural areas are the most that are affected by poverty and development challenges. Secondly, our focus area is in terms of supporting organizations dealing with vulnerable groups to foster social cohesion and create safe and prosperous communities. And thirdly, we focus on supporting organizations working in early childhood development. And fourthly, we also focus on providing capacity building support to civil society organizations to enable them to effectively contribute to poverty eradication initiatives. You will notice that these four focus areas actually touch on what is regarded as the mandate of the NDA in terms of granting funds to civil society organizations, but also in terms of building capacity of those civil society organizations, and hence this focus area. The NDA board approved grant funding to 43 civil society organizations, and the amount amounting to 42 million rand for the year under review. I just want to indicate that the initial budget allocated for project funding was 67 million rand. When we were planning, we planned in terms of the 67 million rand, not realizing that because of the economic meltdown and the, as a result, with Treasury cutting the budgets of various departments, we were also affected by this, because our budget also was reduced by 33 million rand. And surely this reduction in terms of our budget had an impact, therefore, in terms of the initial targets that we had formed or that we had made to achieve, because we had to review those targets so that they do not cover the initial 67 million rand, but cover the amount less than 33 million rand, which was a cut in our budget. That's why I was saying earlier on, despite the financial constraints, at least we have managed to move on in terms of the budget. And I just hope, Honourable Chair, that the portfolio committee could really also assist us, because if really we want to make a difference in terms of the work that we do as NDA, our budget really is very little in terms of addressing various challenges that are out there. And we would appreciate if the, and we're calling upon the portfolio committee to assist us in terms of this aspect in terms of ensuring that we get more resources as NDA in terms of doing our work. We believe that the NDA will continue to be extremely relevant given the government's focus on improving rural livelihoods, provision of quality education, and implementing quality service delivery to the poor. A concrete partnership between NDA, government, and civil society organizations will continue to ensure quality service delivery to poor citizens. And again, this is an important aspect that we focus on as NDA because our focus really is in terms of working closely with civil society organizations because of their important role they play in the communities in terms of addressing development and poverty initiatives. I just want, before I touch on the achievements, request, Honorable Chair, that we move to page 7, I think it's page, slide 7, that slide, before I go back to the achievements. And the reason for that is that I just want to share with the committee in terms of the amount of money that we ended, we have, which was 42 million rand, how it was distributed in terms of various provinces. We have the amount there, and I'll quickly run through that, and I'm sure I don't even have to read the figures. It's clear in terms of that. Eastern Cape with 6.6 million rand, Free State 4.4 million rand, Gauteng 5.3 million rand, KwaZulu-Natal 7.7, Limpopo 5.4, Mpumalanga 3.2, Northern Cape 1.8, Northwest Province 3.2, and lastly Western Cape 4.9. And the total amount is 42 million rand, 42.9 million rand. And the number of projects that were approved in terms of this amount were 43 projects, and you can see the number per province. Having indicated, therefore, how the amount of 42 million rand was distributed in terms of various provinces, I would like to now go back to the slide that talks to achievements in terms of the strategic goals that we have. And I just want to mention also that during the year under review, we had five strategic goals. And those strategic goals, the first one is to build the capacity of civil society organizations to carry out development work effectively, and I'll be talking to what we have achieved around the strategic goal. And secondly, I will be touching on what we have achieved on the second strategic goal, which is to grant funds to contribute towards the eradication of poverty. And thirdly, I will also touch on what we have achieved in terms of the third strategic goal, which is to facilitate research towards poverty eradication. The fourth goal is to position the NDA as a premier development agency and mobilize resources. And the last one is to promote and maintain organizational excellence. And this one really looks internally in terms of what we need to do to ensure that we are excellent in the way in which we do our business. If I can just look at the very first strategic goal, which is to build the capacity of civil society organizations to enable them to carry out development work effectively. During the year under review, we had planned to support the ECDs, those organizations that are delivering on early child development. And I can just indicate that in terms of how we support early child development, we focus on three areas. The first area, we focus on those organizations which are what I would call the networks. For example, under early childhood development, there is the South African network for early childhood development. So what we do, we support the networks at that level. And the networks, what they do, they then support those civil society organizations or those early childhood development sites that fall within that particular network. That's the first level in which you support ECDs. The second level, we directly support ECDs ourselves, not through the network. And the third area is also in terms of ensuring that we, you know, we build capacity as well as the issue of food security, even in terms of the ECDs. So I'd like now to go to the achievements. We, during the year under review, we, nine early childhood development networks were funded and supported for an amount of 9.5 million rand. The network provides support to 224 sites. And also, we supported, directly funded five early childhood development sites or organizations that are delivering early childhood development, and this was at an amount of 2.2 million rand. Each ECD site supported has employed an average of six staff members and volunteers, totaling 390 beneficiaries. This is important to us because we are not only just funding as a way of strengthening early childhood development and ensuring that our children indeed they are exposed to early stimulation for proper growth and development, but also we also use the early childhood development as a way of creating a job for the unemployed. So we are dealing with this as a way of trying also to address unemployment. Hence, we report on the number of volunteers and the staff members that through our support have benefited. Provision of funding and capacity building interventions has improved the quality of early childhood development provision at the sites supported. And again, I just want to emphasize the fact that we are working very closely with the Department of Social Development, because you will recall, Honorable Chen, Honorable Members, that in terms of the Children's Act, there are stipulations that are made around the issue of early childhood development. But most importantly, these sites, they need to meet the norms and standards for them to be registered as proper early childhood development centers. And this is where we come in as NDA, where we assist those that do not meet the norms and standards to the extent that they are capacitated, they have the institutional capacity and management capacity so that they can effectively address the issues of early childhood development. And in other instances, we even assist and fund for the capacity building of the practitioners themselves so that they can be able to ensure that they stimulate these children when they grow there. It's not just a matter of sleeping and playing. So we're working very closely with the Department of Social Development in terms of that. But also one of the challenges, as you know, that these early childhood development centers are supporting largely children that are coming from poor communities, from poor families. And therefore, as part of the support that we provide as NDA, we also address the issue of food security in terms of these early childhood development centers. So you can see that in terms of how we support them, we try to support these early childhood development centers holistically. In terms of rural development, we had targeted earlier on to support 30 rural development and civil society organizations and cooperatives. And although the target was 30, we 24 civil society organizations were supported. And this number, 24, it includes 18 civil society organizations involved in rural development, and six of them they were involved in economic development, and the total amount was 26.1 million rand. The supported organizations are working with 5,147 beneficiaries. Also, we have 68 civil society organizations and cooperatives that received training to enhance long-term sustainability. And again, I just want to spend a minute on this aspect to say you will recall this has been one of the challenges that we have experienced as NDA, that when we are working with these civil society organizations, there is a need to strengthen capacity in a number of areas, because if we are not doing that, the results, I'm sure we have previously we have discussed this with the committee, where we said that some of these organizations had to, you know, be returned back or to close this project for a number of areas. And we have identified, therefore, the importance of building the capacity of these organizations so that they can have the long-term sustainability. 51% of our resources were earmarked for capacity building, and these were committed to rural development. And the NDA targeted 40% allocation of resources. And again here, whilst we had targeted to utilize 40% of resources for capacity building, you can see that it's clear that we exceeded that 40% because we had to go above that to 51% as a way of strengthening the capacity of civil society organizations. And I think, again, this is a reflection in terms of how serious we take the issue of building a capacity of these civil society organizations. On supporting vulnerable, the civil society organizations that are dealing with vulnerable groups, and specifically here we had planned to support 10 civil society organizations, and these fall under the categories of the gender-based violence, child abuse and neglect, issues of HIV and AIDS, orphaned and vulnerable children, the elderly, people with disabilities, and youth development empowerment. We have planned to support 10 civil society organizations. However, we supported 3 civil society organizations that are working with vulnerable groups. And after the budget cuts, which I alluded to earlier on in my introduction, the targeted CSOs were 5, which means the number was reduced from 10 to 5. And there was a 30% under commitment because we ended up supporting only 3 instead of 5. This deliverable will be prioritized in the new financial year, and actually I can indicate that we are prioritizing supporting of vulnerable groups in this current financial year. In terms of those civil society organizations that we supported, 603 beneficiaries benefited from this, and we had 177 volunteers and interns out of a target of 100 were trained in core competencies in sector and program specific areas. Again, you can also see the link here in terms of not just supporting the issues of vulnerable groups as in terms of building a social cohesion, but also we are doing that also in terms of addressing unemployment. Hence, we also focus in terms of ensuring that there are volunteers and interns that benefit from this program. Capacity building, again, interventions have provided our civil society organizations working with vulnerable groups strength in terms of delivering the work they do. 8% of resources were committed to civil society organizations working with vulnerable groups to improve the institutional capacity. This represented a 36% under commitment after the 51% budget cut. On intermediary civil society organizations, we had planned to support 5. Intermediary civil society organizations are those organizations that we fund and in return they support other civil society organizations. And here I can mention organizations like Sangoko, for example. So during the year under review, we supported 2 intermediary civil society organizations at an amount of 1.4 million rand. 80% target was not achieved. You can see we had earlier on planned to achieve 5, and we only supported 2 because of the constraints in terms of budget. Advocacy, lobbying, and think tanks, civil society organizations were not supported. Again, we had thought that part of that 5 intermediary civil society organizations, we would support advocacy, lobbying, and think tanks, civil society organizations that are dealing with various issues, especially around the rights of various vulnerable groups, including children and so forth. And we could not do this because of budgetary constraints. 10 civil society organizations benefited from supported intermediary civil society organizations. The target was to strengthen 50 civil society organizations affiliated to networks and consortia. I've already dealt with this slide that indicates how the amount of 42.9 million rand was distributed. And moving on in terms of our achievements, we had planned to support 30 sustainable civil society organizations and cooperatives in rural development to fund them. And part of that, what we achieved was that, and now I'm dealing with the second goal, which is granting funds to contribute towards the eradication of poverty. What we achieved was that 24 projects involved in rural development were supported for an amount of 26 million rand. And out of this amount, 5,147 direct beneficiaries were supported, and 51% of funding allocated to rural development civil society organizations. Like I said in the earlier on in my introduction, that we focus more on rural development because of the challenges that I experienced there in this rural. Hence, you can see even there that our 51% of our funding was allocated to rural development. On geographic, demographic, and socioeconomic targets achieved, funding projects in targeted sectors and areas resulted in creation of 1,613 jobs and secondary employment opportunities. We feel this is important for us to report because, as I said, that we are also working in terms of ensuring that we create jobs for the for those that are unemployed. On land reform projects that we funded, we had planned to fund 10 of those, and 6 out of the targeted 10 were funded for an amount of 7.8 million rand, and this reflects 40% achieved. 40% was not achieved due to budgetary limitations. And on food security projects, we had targeted 15 projects where we would deal. Earlier on, I mentioned that we also support the early childhood development centers in terms of food security. So we had targeted 15 of these, and we supported 15 ECDs in terms of food security. The NDA committed an amount of 11.8 million, representing an overcommitment of 27.5 for the financial year. Again, we can see here that the focus on early childhood development, again, we have to make sure that we go beyond the target amount to 20, and we have exceeded the targeted amount by 27.5%. 439 direct beneficiaries were supported through this. Still on granting funds to contribute towards the eradication of poverty, which is the strategic goal number 2, we had planned to support 10 civil society organizations supporting vulnerable groups. And in terms of this, we supported 3 civil society organizations in this category, for an amount of 3.5 million rand, and the remaining 70% was not funded, again, due to budget cuts. 8% of the targeted 25% of funding was allocated to civil society organizations supporting vulnerable groups. The remaining 85% target was not achieved due to budget cuts. And out of these 3 civil society organizations that we supported, 603 beneficiaries were supported or benefited from these 3. The third strategic goal is to facilitate research towards poverty eradication. This is an important strategic goal for us also because this is the area where we have to conduct research that has to inform the projects that we support so that we are responsive in nature, we are responding to the needs on the ground. And also this area also assists and enables us to make sure that we learn best practices as we support this, and we are able to share these best practices with other civil society organizations where there is there are lessons learned in terms of a development initiative on the ground. So in terms of, but also importantly, as part of research, for us it is important, you'll see that we have what we call under a secondary mandate, the area that talks to consulting and ensuring dialogue with the civil society organizations. So the dialogue is an important aspect of our work because this is where it provides us with a platform to interact with those that we support, because we cannot be a development agency that is prescriptive in nature, that simple delivers without listening to the voice of the poor and the voice of those that we support. So this dialogue really provides a platform for us so that we can be able to listen to the voice of the poor. And in terms of this dialogue, we had planned to have three dialogues or even seminars. And what we achieved, we had 9 provincial policy dialogues with civil society organizations. And these 9 provincial dialogues were held in the provinces, in all the provinces, as a way of preparing for the Rural Economic Development Summit that we held last year in October. So we started by having this dialogue at provincial level to inform the national summit that we held. We had 4 national think tanks that were held, also leading to the national summit. And I can just mention that these national think tanks also brought together various experts on various themes of the summit to touch on various areas. And they were from civil society organizations, they were from the private sector, they were from government in terms of those, the representation in those think tanks. Provincial strategic policy dialogues also took place in Mpumalanga around the issue of food security, also in KwaZulu-Natal, where the area was on women and children in vulnerable groups, and also in Northern Cape, where a formulation of development forum for Northern Cape NGO coalition was held. We also had a dialogue strategy that was developed and also implemented. We also had a study on mapping the rural economy, which was done. And I can also indicate that this study on mapping the rural economy was the study that informed the themes that we held in the summit, in the Rural Economic Summit, a summit that was held in October. So we started by conducting the study that indicated a number of areas that need to be looked at when dealing with the issues of rural economy. A national summit, which I've just alluded to, on rural economic development was successfully hosted in partnership with Kaelo Worldwide Media, and I'm sure the honorable members saw it because it was really in media. It came out a lot that summit. A seminar also titled The Developmental State and the Fight Against Poverty in South Africa was held to look at the best ways in which we can fight poverty as a developmental state. With regards to the strategic goal number 3, which is to facilitate research towards poverty eradication, also still continuing, we planned to develop a tool for measuring impact of dialogue, because again, we cannot simply continue to have just dialogues without checking whether there is value in what we are doing. So we developed a tool to measure that impact, and these tools were developed both internally to evaluate or to measure the impact of internal and external dialogues. Civil society engagement strategy, MOU was signed between ourselves and the community constituency of NEDLEC. We also had planned that we would also work with the regional cooperation for civil society organization, working specifically with the civil society organization in SADC. But unfortunately, this was not achieved due to budgetary constraints and the budget cut. So we could not work closely with the civil society organizations in the region, which we had hoped we would do. On publications, we had two best practice reports that were completed. We had also five case studies that were produced. And again, as I indicated when explaining this particular strategic goal, this is the work that we do, where we select best practices and we share that with other civil society organizations so that they can also learn how to succeed in certain areas. But also we have case studies. Again, these case studies assist other civil society organizations to learn from these experiences. We consolidated close-out and impact evaluation reports. What we do as part of our funding model process, what we do when we support the civil society organizations, we monitor these civil society organizations in terms of the implementation of the business plan. But also we plan to say halfway through the funding period, we do what we call mid-term evaluations. And again, these mid-term evaluations are not done by our development managers that do the continuous monitoring, but are done by the research unit as a way of, again, checking whether we are now at the mid-term, is this organization, implementing, or is it moving towards achievement of the expected outcomes of this? So we do that. And then at the end of the evaluation period, at the end of the funding period, supposing it was 24 months, at the end of that 24 months, then we will conduct what we call the close-out report. And this close-out report now, it looks really at the whole achievements of this project, the extent to which the project has achieved the objectives as indicated in the business plan, but also to measure the impact of this project. So hence I was talking about, I just wanted to explain that aspect to indicate. So what we did, there were a number of projects that were closed in this financial year, and there were a number of organizations or civil society organizations where the projects were, we evaluated the impact, and we then took all these evaluation reports and we consolidated them into a one report that talks to the impact of various projects. We also, as part of our, again, funding model, what we do before we actually fund a project, we, in other instances, we undertake due diligence because we need to be comfortable, we need to get assurance that what we are funding is something that can be sustainable, there is a need for that. So we would conduct due diligence before funding that really convinces us that indeed there is a need to fund them. So during the year under review, we conducted 84 due diligence. We compiled 84 due diligence reports, and these were consolidated into one report again. And this report gives you a really overview in terms of what are the issues that are emerging from this report. We developed a concept document on papers on or various papers on rural agroprocessing and rural enterprise development. And again, these papers were developed as a way of interacting with civil society organizations to assist them in undertaking rural development projects. Still on publications, the following development information was collated and disseminated to our key stakeholders. The baseline information on identified poverty wards, municipal IDPs and provincial We work very closely with IDPs and provincial growth development strategies and ensuring that we implement those. So what we usually do, it's important that we give information around this so that there is alignment in terms of our work and what is happening on the ground. We had various information on biofuels. We had we developed also and disseminated a manual on project proposals for NGOs. And again, this was done as a response, because what came out from some of the civil society organizations was that it was difficult for them to write or to develop proper proposals. So we developed guidelines to assist them in terms of developing a proposal. We also had guidelines, the National Integrated Plan for ECDs. We also we distributed these. These are, again, this is a document that was developed at the Department of Social Development, and we had to share this, disseminate this to the editors with development organizations that we support for information purposes. We also developed a manual on how to start and run a cooperative. And you can see that the work that we do really is in terms of supporting or strengthening the capacity of our civil society organizations so that they can be able to undertake development work on the ground. In terms of the technical reports that we generated and that were accessed by our civil society organizations, we compiled the profiles of certain councils so that we could ensure that our civil society organizations are working closely with the FEDEC organizations. I've already spoken about the report on due diligence, and I've already touched on the closeout reports. And the closeout reports, we compiled 75, and we had planned to compile 79. We also had 35 provincial project performance monitoring that were carried out. And we also, again, do some on a few number of instances. There are times when we find that we need to do a baseline study before we can start a funding, so that we can be able to measure what was the initial state of this organization, and then we are able at the end of funding to measure the impact in terms of the baseline study. So, but this during this financial year, we did not conduct any baseline studies. On the next strategic goal, which is to position the NDA as a premier development agency and mobilize the resources, we had as a way of positioning NDA, particularly in terms of positive media coverage. We had free publicity in media, which was achieved on a number of areas, in newspapers, but also in TV and so forth, and even on radio stations, local radio stations, with regards to our work. We also have taken five publications that we have advertised as a way of enhancing our messages of NDA in terms of what we do. We have we had, during the period under review, various publications which were produced and distributed in order to update key stakeholders on NDA progress against deliverables. We had planned to have one national network that we would establish. Instead of the national network, the funds were used for the four think tanks leading to the rural economic development, which I've already reported on. On partnership agreements, we this again is an important area for our work, because as NDA, we cannot contribute to poverty eradication unless we build partnerships with other partners, development partners, and we had planned, therefore, to develop partnerships and form agreements and implement those. we entered during the year under review into partnership agreements with the Rural Development and Land Reform, as well as KwaZulu-Natal Social Development and Kaelo Worldwide Media. The partnership agreement with Kaelo Worldwide Media was implemented in hosting a national summit on rural economic development. And I can just mention also that this partnership that we formed with rural development during the year under review, actually there is, you will hear when we report next year about this year's progress, how much work we have done with the rural development in terms of this partnership. So it's yielding quite good results, the partnership. We had a plan to raise 20 million rand, and this was not achieved. And it was not achieved again because of, this has been a difficult year because of economic meltdown, and especially because of really even challenges in accessing a donor funding. But although we did not raise the 20 million rand, through our partnership and through the projects that we funded, as part of those projects that we funded under the year during the year under review, we had partnerships that we signed, and we then benefited in terms of what I would call in kind. Because, for example, we would have an organization that is saying that because you are funding this rural economic development project in the rural area for the amount of 2 million rand, I'm making an example, we would have an organization that is going to say, to undertake this project, it's going to cost 6 million rand, and therefore, or it's going to cost 4 million rand, and therefore we will support you by contributing 1 million rand in a number of ways, whether it's technical support, whether it's mentoring, whether it's on a number of areas. So we have those partnerships where we gained what I would call in-kind support from our partnerships. We do hope that going forward we will manage to raise money as part of mobilizing resources for NDA, particularly given the limited resources that we have. We had a plan to conduct feasibility and comparative studies on models of endowment funds, and again, because of budgetary limitations, we could not achieve this. On the last strategic goal, which is to promote and maintain organizational excellence and sustainability, which I said earlier on, this strategic goal is looking internally in terms of how, what systems do we develop and what processes do we follow internally as an organization to ensure that we achieve sustainability, but also to ensure that we provide excellence and quality service. And therefore, during the year under review, as part of that, we had to improve our telephone monitoring system. Although this might be looked at as a very, you know, minimal issue, it was important to us because also we had to make sure that we reduce spending on telephone. Hence, we had to develop a system on monitoring telephone. And you can see this was an efficient way of ensuring that we manage resources in terms of this aspect. Also, we had to strengthen our IT, and we increased the wireless data link, especially in terms of our provinces. And also, we integrated our system, which is the payroll system. We integrated this together with the financial system so that there can be the issues that relate to HR, there can be that integration so that you make sure that, for example, you pay the right salaries and so forth. So we integrated this system, which has been separate in the previous financial year. We also developed a financial reporting tool to assist us to report on financial management, but on terms of how we are doing. We also amended our financial management and procurement policy during the year under review. With regards to review and update and train on policies and processes, the following human resource policies were reviewed and developed: the job evaluation and grading policy, as well as the recruitment and employee wellness policy. A Know Your Rights campaign was conducted to educate, train, and inform employees on salient clauses in both new and existing policies, especially as they relate to employee wellness and so forth. We developed, during the period under review, a cost reduction strategy, and through that strategy that we developed and implemented, various cost-saving initiatives were implemented, and this resulted in a 7% reduction on traveling costs, 9% reduction on subsistence and travel costs, 20% reduction on travel costs, as well as 25% on postage and courier costs. And I must say that as much as there was a reduction on this, we also had to be cognizant of the fact that it's important our work, again, is guided by the ability of our provincial development managers to travel to the project so that they can monitor and support them. So as much as we had a reduction in this cost, but this was not this did not compromise the work that is supposed to be done in the organization. We could not do the benchmarking. We did the benchmarking studies on management and resource utilization, and actually those part of those benchmarking studies assisted us in developing the cost reduction strategy and implementing that strategy. On monitoring and implementing corrective actions, a variance report on actual performance against budgets were attended to monthly. We did that monthly. We had planned to approve the organizational structure and to do the job profiling during the year under review. We could not finalize this process because also last year we undertook an organizational diagnosis study that we completed that had to influence the review of the organizational structure. So we have to wait for the finalization of that diagnostic report, which was finalized, and therefore the review of the organizational structure is something that will take place during this year. And with regards to creating an enabling environment for people living with disability, we employed one person with disability in the organization, and the 2% strategic goal on employment of people with disability was achieved. We also had to review our values as a guiding tool in terms of the work that we do. And during the period under review, we launched these new values, we institutionalized these values because we take them very serious in guiding the work that we do, and we have since even included them in our performance management system, which means we will measure even our managers in terms of the extent to which they subscribe to these values, and that is how we take serious these values as an organization. That brings us to the end of the achievements on the five key strategic goals. I would like Honorable Chair now to hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to take us through the financial report. Thank you.
Thank you to you all. I do hereby observe all protocol.
No such thing as all protocol observed.
Noted, Honorable Chair. I begin with the statement of financial performance for year ended 31 2011. The NDA received a reduced grant, which the CEO has touched upon, of 42% from the previous year, which I won't expand on. And secondly, the NDA reported an unqualified audit opinion on these accounts. In terms of the figures, the total revenue received was 93.6 million, made up of 83 million of direct grant, and 10 million on other income. This income was appropriated as follows. 48 million was spent on direct mandate costs, which include project funding of 49.5 million, which was supplemented by the money that was available on projects that were written back of 9 million. 2 million was spent for project monitoring and support, and other direct project costs of 6 million were incurred. To support these mandate activities, NDA spent 76 million on administration and governance costs. 51 million was spent on staff. 1 million on governance costs, and the rest on goods and services and other administration costs. So all in all, NDA posted a net deficit of 30 million, which was all funded, but due to an accounting statement which required us to recognize the amendment on GRAP 23, which meant that the funds that we had used in the current year to supplement the budget cut had to be restated and recognized in the opening balance. We had posted a 30 million deficit. However, I need to point out, Honorable Chair, that this is an accounting figure. It's not a cash deficit, and in fact all these costs were funded from the cash reserve that I've related to, which we had in the bank account. So we did not have a cash deficit. I move to the statement of financial position. The NDA had a total assets of 115.6 million, 93% of which was cash held in the bank, of about 110 million, as well as other non-current assets of 3 million, made up of property, plant and equipment of 3 million, and intangible assets, which is a computer software, of 900,000. Immediately it becomes clear that NDA was holding a lot of cash in the bank, which is explained in the lower section of the statement, which states that of that 110 million, in fact, 96 million was already committed to projects. The other 3.6 million was committed to our normal trade creditors. Another 4 million was committed to short-term employee benefits, like leave provision, bonus provision, and so on. Also of note on the liabilities, Honorable Chair, is the disappearance of the EU liability, which was 22.5 million in the previous financial year. The result of that is that this year that figure was removed because we had refunded all the funds to the EU as per the agreement. So in the current financial year, reporting financial year, we had already paid all the funds back to the EU. That is the, in summary, the statement of financial position, Honourable Chair. The highlights on the NDA financial situation for the reporting period, as I've mentioned in the next slide, we explaining the deficit to explain that it would have been avoided had NDA not experienced the budget cut from Treasury in the reporting period, because due to that cut, the NDA board decided then to supplement the NDA projects by releasing the reserves of the founding seed capital from IDT, which then for accounting purposes had to be backdated to the date in which the funds were received, which then meant that it couldn't be recognized in the current financial year and therefore had a technical deficit. But this I must also emphasize again, Honorable Chair, is an accounting deficit and not a cash deficit. In the current financial year, 2011-2012, this whole deficit will disappear without a doubt. I also draw the committee's attention to the fact that the NDA is already implementing a financial management restructured model to deal with the funding ratio between mandate costs and administration costs. The way we're implementing this plan is that we want to target two areas. One, to expand our cost containment strategy in the current financial year, meaning that we want to drive down the administration costs further. As the CEO has presented, that already we have seen the fruits of this emphasis on austerity measures, which has helped us a lot in reducing the deficit, which could have been higher had we not implemented the cost containment in the current financial year. Secondly, to deal with our funding crunch, we have expanded the resource mobilization plans in the current financial year, in fact, in the MTF period, which aims to seek new funding sources while we manage better what we already have. So those are the two pillars on which this financial management model to deal with the ratio between mandate spending and administration spending in the MTF period. In fact, our new strategy for the MTF, Honorable Chair, projects that in 2013-14, dichotomy in the split would have been resolved if we implement all the strategies and activities that we have planned in the financial management model. Honorable Chair, I have touched on the revenue aspect and the plans to expand it in the MTF period, and why we had a deficit. I won't repeat that aspect. The expenditure side, we report that the difference between the previous year spending and the current reporting period spending of 23% is both as a result of the budget cut and secondly as a result of better cost management, as I have explained. The CEO has also explained in detail at the project level how the project funding has been split in terms of projects and provinces. I will not go into much detail on repeating that, Honourable Chair. Lastly, in my presentation, Chair, I just wanted to also touch on the employee costs, which appear to have escalated slightly higher than inflation. We report that the reasons for that was largely because of the key appointments made in the financial year, which is the CEO position being filled, the CFO position being filled, and the company secretary position being filled, which all the three positions were not filled in the prior year. I have explained the breakdown on the total asset, Honourable Chair, the total liabilities, and the comparisons and the reasons between the current financial year and the previous financial year, which is explained by this slide. I will not go into detail, and also the fact that we have refunded the EU balance, that would bring me to the end of my presentation, Honourable Chair. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just in terms of ending the presentation, before my chairman also close the presentation, just want to reflect on the challenges that we have as an organization. First of all, to indicate that the issue of capacity of civil society organizations remains a challenge. As I indicated in my presentation, that this matter, we're taking it very serious to ensure that we allocate the resources for them. It's a matter that is important to us, but it's impacting on the implementation of projects because without the relevant capacity of civil society organizations, then it means it becomes difficult to achieve the results that we want to achieve. Again, the issue of monitoring of projects has improved. You'll recall we had also appeared before the committee where we were talking about the challenges around monitoring, and we are really implementing the turnaround strategy on strengthening monitoring, and we are seeing improvement, although there are still projects that really require holding by hand in terms of supporting them and mentoring them to ensure that they get to the level where they are required to be. The CFO has spoken about the issue of the split between the admin and the mandate costs. That also remains a challenge to us, and achieving a split between mandate costs and administration costs is an issue that we feel that under the current circumstances where we are, the funding is so limited to NDA, it's going to be, as much as we have planned in the medium term to reduce the administrative costs and increase the mandate costs, but if the current situation of the limited funding of NDA remains, it's going to be very difficult for us to reach a level where we can deal with this because, again, the NDA requires a critical mass of dedicated human resources to achieve strategic goals
and this needs to be you know, supported by sound administrative infrastructure. So if that is what you require, therefore, and those things, they center around administration part. So we need to have really increase in terms of our funding so that we can be able to balance these two. I now hand over to the chair and then that's
Thank you very much. It's been a long presentation, so I won't take much of your time. But I asked the CEO to close this presentation because when I was sitting here and looking at this presentation, I got a distinct feeling that there's very little resources and we're trying to spread them on too many areas. And hence, it's impacting on impact and visibility. You know, and we have a session next week, but just to plant the seed that it occurs to me that perhaps NDA will have to exit certain problem areas and focus, for example, on only early childhood development or food security programs and really have much bigger programs, not in terms of a program allocation per project, but in terms of the number and reach. You know, so if we said we're only going to focus on early childhood development and we'll provide capacity building, obviously we need to have follow a proper exit program. We can't just cut next week. But I think that's going to be some one of the conversations that we need to have, because if you look at the amount of operating cost to projects, it's just an abnormality. I mean, you're looking at more than 50%, it's supposed to be on the lower side of 12.5% to 20%. So that's one of the seeds that I think we're going to have to. You know, when you have challenges like we are now, I mean, you are forced to make tough decisions. It does not necessarily mean we'll cut staff costs, but it might be that we reposition staff to focus. And maybe we become the number one early childhood development. Well, it is an area that is lagging. If you look at education, underachievement, because many kids only start to engage with education at the age of 7, 8, 9, which is, you know. So those are some of the things that we're going to have to be forced to, you know, in this with the scarcity of resources and to do. So that going forward, then NDA can have a much bigger impact and visibility. But the status quo cannot remain. Thank you very much, Chair.
Very much, members. Any questions? Honourable Member Twitter, Kupane, Paul's, yes, Alberta.
Sir, thank you very much. I would like to thank the presenters for their very informative presentation, and also like to congratulate you for your unqualified report. I have two questions, Chair. The first one is, I'm a bit worried that the budget is cut, almost half of the budget is cut, because if you look at the money which was given to NDA, it's now half of the money that they were given. And also like to check, I'm not quite sure whether the Auditor General do tell you the reasons why they cut the money. So I wanted to check with you whether you were informed the reasons behind the cut budget. The second one is on page slide number 7. Slide number 7, it's about provincial grant allocation. I just want to check whether, how do you approve projects? Because reasons why I'm asking this, Eastern Cape has got about, Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal have high population, because Eastern Cape has got 20 points and KwaZulu-Natal followed by Gauteng. But to my understanding, in terms of poverty, because if you look at the total approved the province, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal has got 5 approved, and then Gauteng has got 6. And KwaZulu-Natal is more rural, like Gauteng. Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal are more rural. I think that because we're dealing with, we want job creation and poverty alleviation, and you'd expect that you might have reasons why you are giving Gauteng more projects than KwaZulu-Natal and almost same as KZN, whether you look at the population or number of projects that are given. I just want if you could tell me the reasons of giving them six and less than KZN. Northwest also is getting a six. You approved six projects, though their allocation is three million. And yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me thank the presenter for their presentation, and also to congratulate them to receive the unqualified report. It is through your hard work and sweat and all the commitment that we are doing. We really appreciate that. Chairperson, my question is based on the comment from the Auditor General. It's on the predetermined objectives. Point number one, he clearly indicated here that for selected objectives, about 33% of the plan and reported target were not measurable in identifying the required performance. Maybe if you can explain to us why that happened. And secondly, he mentioned about the, in terms of compliance with law and regulations, the irregular expenditure, you are having about 2.5 million. Of irregular expenditure. This is an indication of a poor monitoring and evaluation. Now, here he clearly indicated that the accounting authority did not take effective or take appropriate steps to have avoided irregular expenditure. If maybe NDA can just explain to us why this action has happened. And, yeah, I think so, yes. And the other one, in terms of the leadership, he said that the performance of the entity, it is not measured on the performance of the entity is not measured against the predetermined objectives, indicators and targeted as required by the PFMA. Maybe you can indicate to us why you're not aligning yourself with the regulation. The other question, Chair, maybe to support my colleague here, Mitchell, in terms of the budget cut of 55%, and I'm also worried that especially the projects, the poor alleviation projects are more affected, which means we are more of not fulfilling our mandate, as we said in our mission statement. Now, my question is whether the entity is having any plan of action in terms of how can they get a revenue somewhere else. Do you have some sort of a plan of action? How can you generate more revenue somewhere else so that in future you can be able to remedy the situation? And secondly, again, I was thinking that sometimes we are too much ambitious in life. We all want to be successful. But in terms of maybe because of what we are facing, the financial crisis that we are facing, maybe it is the time for the entity to review all the projects that they are having so that we can come up with measurable and achievable objectives. That is my comment. Lastly, Chair, my comment or my question is regarding the challenges that the NDA is facing every year. Those are the CEO, she mentioned that inadequate skills, unsustainable projects, inadequate monitoring and whatever. So, is it possible that maybe, as a committee, we can be given now the progress report in terms of all the organizations that we met, that we failed to monitor them, what was the problem, how far, maybe a progress report that can be given to us, not to be given as a general overview like you are giving us now. so that we can also help you when we're doing our oversight in our constituency. Thank you, Chair.
Again on the budget, I just want to know what was the reasons behind the discontinuation of the project and how much was the nominal amount that came from these discontinued projects. And then there is another one. Are these normal national think tanks that the NDA held differing from the ones that the agency says they did not happen in this financial year? And the other one is, the NDA was supposed to conduct feasibility and comparative studies on models of endowment funds, but the agency did not continue with the project due to budget constraints. Will the agency carry on with the project in the next financial year? I'll stop there.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think members have covered me, but mine is just to know where are those projects, because we have, I looked at your at page 45 of your books here, annual report books. I only see that you have selected some projects and you didn't give us. So it will be easy for us, especially when you are saying in Northwest we have approved 6 projects. We have to know where are those projects so that when we are doing oversight, right, losing itself, we go and look at that project. But other members have covered me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the auditor's report, are you sufficient that you are providing adequate support capacity training to organizations in terms of treasury regulations and in regard to the PFMA? My other concerns were covered in terms of the Auditor General. On page 3, I need to understand that you have 51% of resources earmarked for capacity building. But we still find that CBOs and NGOs are struggling. Is your capacity building getting value for money? Now, I find it rather strange, but by the virtue of the fact that in spite of your challenging, or rather shall I say that your balance sheet slipping, you have gained an unqualified report in regard to your financial statements. That's commendable, but it also requires much harder work. This one is quite interesting. Still on page 3, you have not achieved 80% of your target because of budgetary constraints. I also share the same sentiment that we should have a detailed submission on the various projects, the level of completion, and perhaps maybe information as to whether they are completed or incomplete. Can you elaborate a little on the issue of job opportunities? In what area? Is it temporary jobs, sustainable? And what is the sensitivity about gender promotion in your job opportunities? Chairperson, 80% of the target, 25% of funding was allocated to CSO supporting vulnerable groups. Now, poverty eradication, as the presenter had time and again alluded, emphasis were placed on the rural area, and quite correctly, we agree with that notion. But the fact that 80% was not achieved, and only 25% funded to vulnerable groups, there might be a slight contradiction in your notion. We need explanation as to why vulnerable groups receive such 25% attention. This also adds up to the good lady that made the presentation and said that we must listen to the voice of the poor, and I agree with that. But there is a contradiction between the seminars that you have alluded to here in your presentation and your outcomes. Is the seminar speaking to your strategic and operational implementation? I want to know, Chair, that why no baseline study was conducted during this financial year? My colleague stressed the concern about KwaZulu-Natal. Let me take it a little further. That I noticed in your organigram that there's a vacant position, and the high levels of poverty, as indicated in KwaZulu-Natal, might have a problem with the vacancy. Why was that post not filled? Could you very briefly explain to me? I need to understand this in accounting terms. You know, you say that you have a 33 million fund. Then you utilize your surplus from your records. Is it proper to categorize your surplus as a right against the shortfall of your funding? I need to understand that. And whilst on the budget matters, the 20 million that you achieved in your gain support, was it something like that you mentioned? Now, shouldn't that be included in your balance sheet? Shouldn't it be part of your operating capital? And why not? So that it minimizes the challenge of your budgetary constraints. So that you can also achieve your strategic strategic plan based on the alignment of your budget. There is a slight contradiction, and I just need to understand that. Chair, yeah, I'll leave it there for now. Thank you very much.
Can we go to the slide? Thank you. Where you show that the provincial breakdown project. And then can we go to page 4 of the annual report? Could you tell me why does the total of the amount committed per province, the summary of the total, differ from an annual report to what you're giving us today? Okay. That's number one. So I think if you look at
because I think what is missing here is the national project that is not there. And if I look at Limpopo, the figure is right. If I look at Mpumalanga, the figure is right. Eastern Cape, seven is there. Northern Cape 3 is there, which is 1.8 million, right? Western Cape, it says 3 projects in the annual report. It says 4 in your presentation. KwaZulu-Natal, 5 is corresponding. But the figure is not corresponding. What is in the annual report and what you are giving us is two different figures. Then, in terms of Northwest, is 6, and the figure is not corresponding. Now it is. It is. Free State is 6. Okay. Fine. Gauteng is 5. You say it's 6. And in the annual report, it's 6. It's 5. And the national is not here. You see, because if you are getting... Could you explain this to us? Why? Because this is very serious. That's why the last time we said to you, goodbye, we'll see you next time. You come with the real facts, with the right facts. Now, there's an anomaly here in the, I don't know whether you mixed the national projects that you've referred to here up for the figures, and then it has an influence, because your totals are still the same. Although your grand total, in terms of the summary of the total funds, is different. Okay? That's number one. This is the second question I want to ask, and I would like the CEO to respond, or let me ask the chairperson of the board. I would like the Sherry to respond, the advisor to the minister and the deputy minister. While I will give some time to the CEO and his team just to sort out the anomalies and the figures. In terms of what you said, chairperson, that you're going to go to a strategic planning session, you're going to have a reflection on where you are going with your strategic priorities and in terms of what role you want to play in the social development sector. Right? Now, if I look at your mission statement, I got all excited because you were really repositioning yourself. If you look at all the entities that are there, you look at the IDC, you look at NEDLAC, you look at Irukula and all the other entities, shouldn't there also be a redirection of some development funds to the NDA? Why can't the NDA be made the development agency to look at precisely at those issues that you are, so that you can do justice to your mission statement. But also, if you look at addressing poverty and alleviating poverty in South Africa, you look at building capacity for NGOs, and you look at and NGOs with green all sectors. Right, not just in the social development sector. If you look at ECD, is part of education as well as social development in terms of mandate. And the government also has a priority, which it has been shirking in terms of the Systems Act that pertains to local government. So it's always been the IDPs, but they're not taking any responsibility for ECT. So clearly, even in terms of the type of infrastructure that we have, which we call welfare infrastructure, we're not even looking at what we have because of our focus. Don't you think that our focus are too diversified, that we should look at if you have, because it says the fact that you're managing your finances shows that you have the institutional capacity. And even if I look at your governance structure, that you have the capacity to expand your business and to be very strategic, but also that you can manage funds. I see there's a marked improvement in terms of the annual report besides this, because I'm sure here it's just the fact that you've missed out on this one category. Maybe you've moved into the other provinces in terms of the national. But don't you think that there needs to be a strategic refocus in terms of social development, especially in terms of social development projects, as it reflects in your mission statement? Instead of the NGA looking inward, shouldn't the whole sector look inward?
No, thank you very much. I'll respond to your question through comment, and I think there was also another question around broader resource mobilization. What we have tasked management to do, and which is a decision that we've made as a board, has been that the NDA needs to not just position itself as a grant funder, but it needs to utilize its experience and expertise to also become a project manager. In that regard, we've actually tasked the CEO to work towards establishing a project management unit, because one of our fears and concerns was that because there is a culture of receiving funding from government to look for projects, if we were to then mandate the same people to go out and look for funding, it could actually be arrested in that culture. So hence we have said that let's create a new project management unit, and then we should treat government grant as a seed capital, which should then be leveraged twice, three, four times by sourcing funding from other particular partners. I mean, we give an example, for example, on the mining industry, which tends to be in rural areas. I don't think you'll find the mine in the town. And we know they all have social and labor plans, which many of which are not necessarily implemented. And that could create an opportunity, for example, for the NDA to be one of the, if not the agency, that can then work with the mining industry to make sure that the social and labor plans that they promise when they get mining licenses are implemented. And I think if you go a long way, I come from a mining town, and I know that less than 30-40% of what the mines promise to do, they don't do. So that's one of the things that we've asked the CEO and the team to look at, and it will be a key deliverable from a performance management point of view. We've also set a very audacious target, I think, of R1 billion over the MTF period of funds that the NDA will leverage from third-party projects. So that's quite a thing. And as the board, we've indicated the willingness to assist in that regard in terms of connecting the NDA with different parties. So that's just going back to the issue around what else can we do rather than just to look to government, as is correctly said, to be inward focused, but to be more outward focused. And what we're saying then is that if we did that successfully, perhaps we do that in two areas, one on the focus on food security and poverty alleviation, because it's a very big, resource-hungry type of intervention, and there we should work with rural development, we should work with the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries and all other relevant departments and leverage resources towards that. If we did that successfully, then perhaps the little resource we have there should be an area where we become very good at, where we can direct almost 60 to 70% of our resources. Our view is that early childhood, if you look at EPWP, among in addition to infrastructure, is supposed to be focusing on early childhood development. Our view is that that particular area of focus has not necessarily, being implemented to the largest extent possible, and that gives an opportunity for the NDA to actually position itself as a voice and a leader on issues around children as part of the vulnerable groups, and including being an advocate for implementation of the Child Justice Act. But more importantly, on early childhood development, really be a lead and a think tank and really become and make sure that as many as possible of the children in rural areas and townships do participate in education facilities before they go to formal schooling. Because our view is that that is the lag that we see in terms of educational achievement between poor children and middle-class and rich children, is that many rich and middle-class children engage with education at a much earlier, 2 years old, than would a child who comes from poor communities. So that is the one area where we feel as the NDA, we should take the resource we have, and in that regard, we are proposed, when the minister has agreed that we have an accord between the minister, as in government, labor, and business, to really come up with an accord and a program which we can agree to as the social partners to really give early childhood a big push. When you ask many communities like the Cubans why they have such high literacy rate, part of the success lies in the fact that they start early. So that's really where we would like to focus on. Maybe I can hand over to the advisor and the deputy chair to add on those strategic issues and come back to the specific, the deputy minister. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't think that we will make very extensive comments on the issue that you have raised, because I think what we have posted as a question, you have just hit it, on its name. The remark that, for instance, one was going to make even prior to your intervention was going to pick up on what the chairperson of the board was saying. And I'm saying around the chair, and I was just consulting with the deputy minister here. The truth of the matter is that I think we have reached a point of the necessary rupture for the NDA. And I think your input is just, reaffirming that. There is a need to really, 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 really turn this entity on its head and refocus it. Boom. And I think when the chairperson of the board was saying, it can't go on like this, it can't be business as usual, it's so true. That's really what it is. So I think from where we stand, it doesn't, Honorable Chairperson, start even at the level of saying, how do you complement the existing resources of the NDA? Because then you're actually fetishizing the structure that is actually floated. What you just said, just simply indicates that. So I think that moving forward, which is really where the ministry is coming from right now, is to actually say that indeed you need to refocus and refocus it exactly along the lines that you have just been intervening on and what the chairperson, was saying now. It appears as though, which is what has been the history of the NDA, for too long, it has evolved, as some kind of an isolated, entity, out there, which just simply interrelates development issues as it chooses, as opposed to actually say, how do you actually align this with the mandate of the department and with the mandate of the state, in its raw sense of the word. So, the ministry is actually taking a stance that this is the time to actually refocus it, and this kind of intervention is reinforcing that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm a little bit taken aback. But let me start by indicating that really we have lost one of our board members
as the chairperson has indicated, Uluisa Mphahlele Mlewa. Death has again robbed us of one of our board members. And I think it was supposed to be proper for us to stand up and observe a moment of silence, but I won't do that now. But Chairperson, it seems quite a while since we met, and the National Development Agency is, to me, it is there to unlock the potential and give hope to the poor, implement development projects to the poor communities, and strengthen the institutional capacity of other civil society organizations. Now, having said that, to me, NDA is part of the social development as an agency within social development. That's how I believe. And that is why I'm saying I'm a little bit taken aback, because what Mr. Shezi is saying here, that it has sort of become a standalone entity. I was going to point out to the two issues, to the issue that you raised, that is in the slides, the very same provincial grant allocation, and what is in the in the annual report. As an individual, I am assigned with the development of communities, meaning that I'm working directly with NDA. But I've just received the annual report now. So to me, it's silencing me in a bit. Now, as you all know, that we want to have an effective and developmental oriented public service, a public service that is empowered. I think the word that I thought was no longer supposed to be in our vocabulary, the word capacity, lack of capacity, still have a place in our vocabulary. Listening to all what has been said today, that is why I don't want to engage in answering questions now. Rather, I would prefer that the board and the CEO answer questions and maybe ask for a meeting between us, advisor, ourselves, the board, and the CEO, to look at what are the shortfalls, what is it that made us not to meet before coming here, and look at the issues, especially when you look at the two graphs, the issue that is in the annual report, and the slide that is on the screen now, it leaves much to write about, to write home about. For us to be able to empower communities, I think we need to create a better South Africa between ourselves first, before even going further to try to empower our communities. But before maybe finishing, what I would like to see coming from the NDA is a list of projects that we, as the department now, together with the committee, can visit and also the early childhood centers that are there, that they are reporting about, that I don't know whether the advisor know about those early childhood centers. We know that he says no. And also a clear agreement on how it is the mentoring is done, a written agreement in actual fact, and a progress report made by social managers, and also a contribution by other agencies like the IDT, which we don't have now. And what they mean about secondary employment opportunities that should be given to us. Because to me, NDA is part of social development. But as it is now, it seems as if they are working as an independent agency. So I think I need to have those before really I can subject myself to answering some of the questions that were answered or were asked.
I'm going to look fine because there's a few more questions, and then can I ask that the CEO and the chairperson just respond to the questions that made this first? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just having two simple questions here. We were just told that there was a budget cut, and unfortunately the poverty alleviation projects were the one that were affected. But when I was busy checking over again the annual report on page 71, I was looking at the performance bonuses that were paid to the officials. Last year, and we were also told that the staff costs were increased by 10% because of the appointment of the CEO and the CFO. But when I checked the bonus performance that were paid, now I'm asking myself, why is the agency so concerned about our people who are poor and the mandate as the agency what we want to achieve in this country? Why couldn't they just compromise the performance bonus? Because even some of us here, we are not even receiving the performance bonus or either the status check. But that is the sacrifice and the call that we have taken. But really, if you compare, last year they paid themselves amount of 114,000. What I don't know if it's million or 14, I didn't calculate well, and then this says 193. Why the performance bonus was not one of the things that maybe they could have cut and said that we're not going to pay ourselves this, because this money could have paid one of the NGOs. My second concern, Chair, is regarding under the annual report again, in the under point 26, contingent assets. Here is a cut and paste, Chair, to be honest, because we are not giving a follow-up about that misappropriation of assets that one of the clerk misappropriated the 2.7 funds. Now, here is page 81 of the annual report. If you check the previous annual report, it's the same information. If anyone having the copy of the previous annual report on page 69, we are still told the same story that the asset forfeiture unit, they are still applying their realization in order prior to paying over the recovered asset. But for how long are they still going to apply their mind? So I think this must come to an end, Chair. Thank you.
I just want to make one point of clarity on what the point. When you and me were sworn in by the speaker, that's when we in our conditions of service, there's no certificate check, there's no bonus. Mm-hmm. We only get increase in salary. With employees, on the other hand, they get a certificate check because there's a performance, my abandoning me. And there's a policy in terms of performance measurement in every department. And it's a right of an employee to be evaluated. So as a politician, as an institution, you can't take that away.
from any employee. If I was employee of government, I would also be insisted to be evaluated, especially if I'm doing a good job. So you can't take, because of a budget cut, say that the unions are going to get you, and the managers can take on the CEO and the board in that matter. But even if I look at the payouts, I don't think it's very. If you look at what Eskom is getting, if I look at the 19,000, the 23,000 that the NGA senior managers are getting, and you look at the millions that the CEO of Eskom is getting, it doesn't pay to be a senior manager, does it? In terms of the public sector. The public sector bonuses, that I'll explain to you, is very much regulated compared to the envious colleagues in the parastatal. So you would actually find it justified, even in terms of income, and maybe the CEO can explain that, how it works. So even the 193,000 that has been paid out for bonuses is really insignificant, but it is also part of the conditions of service of employees in general.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and the Deputy Minister. I will respond to the question, and my colleagues are going to assist me in some of the questions. The CFO will deal with budget questions. I will deal with the rest of the question, and Mr. Mohano will deal with some of the questions which I will indicate which ones, and Prof will deal with the one or two which I will indicate. Starting with the very first question that was raised around the cut in terms of the budget. And whether we were told with regards to the reasons for the cut, the reasons were indicated as the reasons was that in that particular year, which was last year, budgets for various departments were cut because of I think the rising lending. Whatever money for the country. So a number of departments' budgets were cut. But, yes, by Treasury. They were cut by Treasury. And we had no choice. It was something that was done. But also in our interaction with the Treasury also, we have since picked it up also that Treasury also did not understand the funding model of, if I can put it that way, of NDA, in the sense that, and I'm going to take just 1 minute to explain, in the sense that if this year we approve a project for 24 months and the amount is 3 million rand, let me make an example, it's 3 million rand, that 3 million rand is not given to the project in the financial year, all of it. It's given in tranches, and therefore, at the end of the financial year, you would find that we have transferred 1.5 million, for example, at the end of the financial year. But there is 1.5 million that is still remaining in our, at the bank, which is the amount committed to that particular project, which is why the CFO was explaining that amount which was in our reserves, how much was committed for projects and that. And at the time, and it, now that we have explained that and the Treasury understands, for them it looked like we have a lot of money that we are keeping somewhere at the bank, you know, and yet those monies were committed. So that's why I take it that for us NDA,
the percentage that was cut as part of that budget was even bigger than the percentage in other agencies, because they felt that we have money that is there, not understanding, you know, the business model. We have had bilaterals with Treasury, and I can safely indicate now that there is understanding in terms of the reserves that are at the bank. That is money that is committed to projects. But also, I just want to indicate that we have also realized as NDA that after the budget cut, we should have, because we had already committed the spread plan in terms of what was going to be done. And I think, Honorable Chair, what we should have done, we should have retabled a new spread plan reflecting the cuts in the budget. And that's a mistake that we need to accept that we did not do. And as a result, and actually this goes back to explain the question that was raised on the comments of the Auditor General around our targets and performance reporting. Because for the Auditor General, it's about what was in the spread plan, you know, and what we are reporting. Because if you look at it now, we are saying we should have done 10, and now we are reporting 2, and yet after budget cut, we had to reduce that 10. So, you know, you can see the discrepancy in that. Yes, so that is around that as much as, and actually in our discussion, even with the Auditor General, they said at the end they understand, but they had to put the statement because it's saying the spread plan talks to some targets and our reporting, it's that. So it was about a right that, as which I'm saying, I do accept that we should have retabled the revised plan, and with them that is taking into account the budget cut. With regard to the irregular expenditure and the comment again, the comment of the Auditor General in terms of we did not, as prescribed in terms of PFMA, we did not deal with the issue of irregular expenditure. I can just indicate that at the time of audit, we had not taken steps with regard to that irregular expenditure and the people that were involved in terms of that. Hence the comment. But also I can just indicate that as part of our process of reviewing, because also we identified some gaps in terms of our finance policy, and some of those issues we have addressed them in reviewing the finance policy, and we hope that going forward these are the things that we are going to be able to deal with. I agree that at the time of the audit, there was no action that was taken in addressing the issues of the relevant officials that were responsible for the irregular expenditure. The question on a list of the projects that honorable members can visit, we can provide the list. We can provide the list of those projects, the projects that we funded in this particular financial year, so that we can you can visit them. You'll recall even last year we presented you with the list of all the projects and where they are located. So we will submit the list of these projects so that you can be able to visit them the projects. There was a question around the 80% non-delivery, and I just want to say that 80% is related to the civil society organizations that are supporting vulnerable groups. It's not on the total. It's not the 80%
underachievement on the total budget, but it's 80%. Let me recall, I think it was 5, if I'm not mistaken, and we supported 2. Yes, yeah. We had planned to support 5, and we did not support the 5. We supported 2, I think it was around that. But all I'm trying to say is the 80% really does not talk to the overall budget. It just talks to that category of vulnerable groups. And again, which we have said that we will try to deal with that this financial year to support more of that. The question on capacity building, whether our capacity building is adding any value and whether we are capacitating our organizations in terms of compliance to PFMA, in terms of the challenges, Honorable Chair, I have indicated that one of the challenges that we have is still the capacity of civil society organizations. And for us, that's why we always put that, because it's the issue that every time when we have new organizations coming in, you would realize that they don't even have capacity to manage funds. Let me put it that way. They don't have the capacity to manage funds. We've got our policy that outlines, you know, how the money should be spent and all those things. And I mean, we literally experience difficulties. And that is why I'm saying in other instances, we have to take them through the financial management training that is basic to assist them just to manage the funds. But that is not enough. In other instances, when you monitor and you're supposed to come up with reports, you will still find discrepancies in how the funds are managed. So for us, it's something that really we need to continuously look at. There are challenges. The PFMA requires reporting, which is part of that. I mean, it's a battle even in terms of getting proper reports from these organizations in terms of saying how they have utilized the money. We have to assist them even in terms of the, just in terms of giving capacity on reporting on the utilization of funds. So for us, we continue to have a challenge of capacity, and I can safely indicate that really we see this as long as we are funding new organizations every time, we are still going to get organizations that need to be capacitated here and there. And that is why we have taken a strategic decision as the organization that now any project that we fund, we ring fence amount that is dedicated for capacity building, even before we know what the needs are going to be. There's an amount that is ring fence that is put aside, that this is for capacity building, because we have realized that unless we do that, we will continue to have a challenge in terms of capacity building. The issue on the figures, Honorable Chair, that breakdown of the provinces, especially the difference. There's a difference if you look at the total of 500 and something. It's 500 and something if you look at the total, and it indicates the difference in number of projects in Western Cape and as well as Gauteng. I think we should have sticked to what is in the annual report, because what happened, there were national projects that, although they are residing in Western Cape and Gauteng, we regarded them as national projects. And therefore, what we did, we just added them in terms of that in the presentation. But I think we should have, with due respect, we should have just sticked to what is indicated in the annual report. Or explain it. Mm, yes, or explain it before.
before I started. I must apologize for that. The question, I would like Prof just to touch on one aspect. The question was, we spoke about the dialogues, and they're saying that it's listening to the voice of the poor, but it doesn't look like the dialogues that we held were. And I can just want Prof to just indicate that in the 9 provincial dialogues that we had leading to the rural economic development, those dialogues actually influenced the summit, and because that's where the issues of rural economic development came from the ground in terms of those. And Prof can just take 1 minute just to reflect on the themes of the rural economic development. But indeed, they were informing the summit, the bigger summit, on rural issues.
I would want to say there are 2 questions linked to what she was just explained in terms of the think tank also, that we said we were not able to do the think tank. I want to differentiate what as the organization, what we mean by the think tanks. The summit think tanks were to generate knowledge, which comes from the rural, from the rural community. We generated knowledge, brought those knowledge to the national. We had the four think tanks, which are the topic I showed in the annual report, to consolidate that. But the think tank that we do are to generate eminent research, eminent policy scholars related to development issues in the country as advisors on development issues for the NDA. Because of the resource constraints, we took a strategic decision that we could deal with what we have, and hopefully when we get that, we could get that. So the difference between those things. Now, in terms of the inputs, the first thing we did, as the CEO explained, is we carried out a mapping of the rural economy. So the NDA knows what's happening with the rural economy. With in terms of generating, by talking to people, by our direct beneficiaries, we were able to generate information, we were able to generate strategic topics, which did not always speak to them, but spoke to us, to our own strategies. So the information that was generated during that led to the conversation that we had in the national summit. Thank you.
With regard to that, just on the question, the Honorable Chair also explained the issue of performance bonuses, and I don't think I should go back in terms of that. But suffice to indicate that actually, if you look at the bonuses that were given, there's not even one person that received more than 4%. 4%. There are only 2 who received about 3.5 or so. The rest of the people received 3% in terms of the total annual package. And if you look at that, that is even less than the senior management service in the public service, if you look at their performance management structure. So it was the percentage really were very low in terms of the bonus. Mr. Mukhana will deal with the questions that relate to the employment opportunities, whether what are secondary employment opportunities, whether these are sustainable, and also will deal. And then the HR executive will deal with the filling of the provincial manager position, and lastly, Prof can talk to the baseline studies, and then we'll complete the question.
Thanks, Chairperson. The issue of the slide on the numbers of projects is technically closed, but I just want to highlight one issue. And the issue is there is no correlation between the amount that is given to the province and the amount of projects that will be approved in that province. For instance, when we approve the projects, we don't say Eastern Cape necessarily approves 6 projects, because the nature of the project is different. An income generating project is different from an ECD. The amount for income generating may be higher and for ECD might be lower. So it is possible that in the Eastern Cape, although you have a larger allocation, let's say of 7 million or 6 million, it may well be possible that you end up with two or three projects because the nature of the projects in the Eastern Cape are big. And it could be that it has to do with the integrated nature of the program. So it doesn't necessarily mean that if you have 7 million, then it equals maybe to seven projects because the allocation per project is different. I just wanted to clarify that. The issue around the jobs, the 1-6, I think it's 1-6, 1-6-1-3 jobs. Yes, those are direct jobs. They are not indirect jobs. We have not included the seasonal opportunities that may come up. Say, for instance, if it's a citrus project, you know that the harvesting time is around May, June. We have not included this, the seasonal opportunities. But also that you know that in the public service or in development, when you get involved in this kind of business, you say, I am paying a salary for one person, and that person will indirectly impact on five lives within a household. We haven't done that. We haven't included that extrapolation in the figures themselves.
Or maybe Prof can start with the due diligence and then we deal with the budget. That's enough.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. I think if we look at, we go back to slide 8, would allow me to answer both the baseline and the due diligence activities. Now, before the NDA does any funding, before that funding is done, there is a research conducted which looks at the strategic information within the provinces in terms of this information can be considered generic. But there you analyze this PGDS, LED programs, you then know exactly what the terrain is within the within those provinces, which informs the funding process. If you go into our presentation, you would find that there is a subsection that says plan socio-economic, demographic, and socio-economic targets. Now that's the product that leads to our funding. That tells us what is in there. Now, the baselines, actually they are called, we would call them, when we talk within the house, is specific baselines. Should the adjudicating process for funding does not have enough information, for instance, we talk about piggery. We know that you cannot grow piggery in the Northern Cape because of the heat and things like that. But somebody in the Northern Cape wants to do piggery. We then ask for specific baseline information that would provide that in that. So the baseline that we're not there, we had adequate information to do funding. We had adequate information to do funding. So we didn't need any specific baselines for the period. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There is a question about why have we not capitalized the 20 million in the balance sheet to supplement the budget shortfall. I think the amount shown in the slide is actually shown as not achieved. So this was actually a budgeted amount which we could not achieve as a result of not being able to mobilize those resources. So we actually had to revise and actually reverse the amount because it would have meant that we budgeted for amounts that we actually didn't have or haven't got even a commitment for. So it wasn't capitalized for those reasons. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Now that the the chairperson of the board and CEO and her team has responded on some of the questions. I think from the minister's point of view, I would just like to put on record a couple of issues. The first one is that from where the minister stands, the future of the NDO is definitely not bleak. You know, I think she's taking a very positive, you know, view on it. And in that respect, she's taking quite a hands-on approach. She has had engagements with the NDO, you know, which are really fresh engagements from the NDA. Thank you. Hi there. She has had a couple of meetings where she's actually spelled out, you know, where she sees the NDA actually, you know, evolving. Secondly, she has, allocated a substantial amount of budget in the department, you know, to actually start working on this refocus process that we've been talking about, you know, on the NDA. So there's a process that is going there. And thirdly, she takes the view that the kind of discrepancies that exist, you know, now between the mandate cost and administrative cost is an expression of the fundamental flaws in the NDA. So her view is it's not about, you know, coming to this body here and talking about the need for additional budget. First and foremost is to address those structural issues. And I think that there are some very painful things that might actually happen at that level, but she's actually looking into it very seriously right now. Fourthly, there is a diagnostic report which was done by the board and the management, you know, of the NDA. It's currently in front of the minister. It reveals quite a lot of, you know, serious issues. The minister is looking into it, and I think she hopes that the board is also actually, you know, going to do or is already doing that which is necessary around those issues. But I think I'm highlighting those issues from the minister's point of view so that if down the road, there are some hot issues that come out, the portfolio committee does not get surprises because the minister is actually right at it. Thank you very much.
Now, thank you very much for the response. Members, it's now 12:15. Is there a follow-up, Mr. Buddha?
Chairperson, please, if you could just allow me to do a follow-up.
Yes.
Chairperson, we have no doubt whatsoever that we agree with the notion of the chairperson. A country that develops its youth and children is a country who has a future, and we agree with your notion. Chair, there's one question that has not been answered, the issue of the post in KZN. If I could get a response to that, but I could please, I want to do a follow-up after that.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chair. On the...
No. Can you just hold your horses for a while? Because we're giving the honourable members just a chance to raise the questions. Just to say that honourable member Kupane says a question hasn't been answered. I think it was the last question. Eh? Yes. Honourable member Twitter?
Chair, mine is answered, but I think the interpretation of money allocated versus projects is not the way I was putting it. Because I'm saying Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal are more rural and they have more unemployment than Gauteng. Why is it that Gauteng is almost equal to those, you know, allocations of monies and projects? It's like now I'm saying why, it's like I'm saying projects are equal to money. I didn't say that. I'm saying Eastern Cape and KZN, in terms of poverty level, they are high. But, you know, according to social development, all the time, even when you compare the money given to grants of children, Eastern Cape has got more and more than money given to grants, foster care grants and everything. So why do we have almost equal numbers than with Gauteng? That's what I was saying.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Indeed, we agree with the Honorable Member that you know the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu Natal have got high poverty levels. And I think going forward as NDA, this is what we need to look at in terms of distributing money according to the poverty levels, because currently what is guiding us is the population index. Is a population index that says, and if you look at that table, you'll see that money is distributed according to population index. So which means if you've got more people, you get that the ratio that we use, you'll get more. But we are not giving it according to the poverty level. Again, I think this is a challenge that we need to look at in the broader context in terms of that,
I think it's a correct observation that there's more poverty there. My personal experience often has been the lack of counterparties in terms of, you know, strong counterparty NGOs to work with from a capacity point of view. That tends to sometimes limit the, you know, the number of, because people migrate and so on, but you're quite correct to say. Then the question should be, what do we do? I mean, if you looked at something that stood out was the number of partnerships we have. I think there's more we can do in terms of partnering with provincial government departments to shore up some of our capacity in those provinces so that we deepen our interaction there. So I think that's something that we will correct going forward.
Addition or what, but I just wanted to raise this issue that in the CEO's view and the chairperson's view and the board's view, are we really making inroads in the far-flung rural areas on the issue of eradicating poverty? Because I'm asking this because I'm visiting all the provinces, as you all know that there's that program. Really, when you get there, you don't seem to see anything in particular relating to development. It's just a drop in a few areas. But really, when you get to the people themselves down there, it might be glossy when we're sitting in the offices, but in actual terms, on the ground, nothing is visible. Are we really out there, or are we in our offices?
The issue, did you touch on the... See, on the issue of the regional manager of KZN. Okay. If we go on, then you can just conclude, the chairperson can just conclude. Can I give over to your official in the back?
Okay.
On the back? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. On the question on the provincial manager for KZN, the position became vacant as a result of the disciplinary processes that were undertaken by the organization, which processes then culminated in a disciplinary hearing. And finally, we then accord what they call the official and the opportunity for an appeal. The appeal was then dealt with, the matter was then disposed, and the services of the provincial manager was then terminated. Then the position has been advertised. We are in the process of shortlisting. And just to indicate to members that in the interim, we have been acting provincial manager who runs the office.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. That's the last question of the Honorable Member that we did not respond to.
Mr. Let's just
afford Mr. Bula the last opportunity to ask a question. That's the end of the questions, and then you can respond to everything. Because remember, he said he wanted, after that response, he wanted to follow up. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have no doubt that the capacity that the Honourable Minister had alluded to, the fact that the Honourable Minister is present here today shows us her commitment to ensure that we will definitely indeed deliver all our people the broad suffering masses from the shackles of poverty, and her commitment here today is really indeed appreciated. But having said that, Chairperson, it fills my heart to note that NDA has produced a balanced balance sheet with so much of constraints, and the discrepancies that lies within the funding models. I want to make reference to a particular, perhaps maybe I don't know whether it's an institution, but I will look at it as a vindictive individual trying to advance opportunistic benefits, not resulting in the translation of social well-being and economic opportunities for the suffering masses, but for individuals. And to this angle, I'm referring to huge amounts of funding that I see in the media that are allocated to, I think it was an institution that was called Phoenix Community Center. And in translating these huge amounts of funding, where we have rural areas that are battling to survive to deliver our people from poverty, I think there might be some sort of I don't want to use the word maladministration or corruption, but I think we must be more sensitive to how we are directing funds to which area, as indicated by the Honourable Member who left about poverty levels should be taken on those areas. I mean, we all are aware of the lotto that is also giving huge amounts of money. I think there was a 2.9 million fund in KwaZulu-Natal. And I was actually present at that event. And I don't think that event would have cost even 150,000. So this is what I'm trying to say. The duplication of funding, we must be sensitive that institutions and organizations are not using NDA to duplicate funding, etc. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Well, this Phoenix Community Center, is it funded by the NDA or is it funded by some other entity?
Chair, I know that there was a huge amount of funding that came and was funded through a high-ranking official in the municipality. You know, I read about that in the media, and I was quite surprised. That's right. I'm just letting the information to NDA so that these examples could be learned, and also a better monitoring, observation of such institutions that might knock on your doors for funding.
Thank you, Shepard and Ms. Mtlapa.
Yes. Chairperson, I'm being asked to respond to the issue of contingent assets. Is note number 26 in the financial statement, page 81. The question was, this comment has been in the annual report for almost 2 years running, and that is correct. But I'm glad to report, Chairperson, that indeed that order to receive the money from the Assets for Future Unit will be realized in this financial year. The reason why it has taken so long is that there has been ongoing negotiation with the Asset for Future Unit around the percentage that should be paid to them for the for recovery of the money. And we've been feeling that as an organ of state, if I may put it that way, we shouldn't be paying for things that they are mandated by legislation to perform. But this is where we are, Chairperson, at the moment. We will be able to realize that order for the 2.7 in this financial year.
Chairperson, I'd like to cede my speaking rights to Anne Bibi Khan, just to, in closing, follow-up. And I think in our board, you know, if you look at our board, they are all
people who are not boardroom activists in as far as poverty and dealing with vulnerable groups. And maybe she can just close that and I think share with the Deputy Minister the passion that we feel in as far as change and visibility is concerned, because I think her comment is a comment more than a question. I think it's something that inspires and drives us every day to make sure that we make a difference. So with your permission, Chair, I would like to hand over to Aunt Bibi to close up our presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm caught unawares. Oh, I was really getting ready to pack up. I come back from a long trip 2 weeks ago to look at the instruments that we have at an international level, to the instruments that we have on this continent and what we have locally. And fundamentally what is coming through is the right to life. We do not allow the death penalty in our country. And that is fundamentally in relation to our situation that we need to deal with in our country, because it also links the right to life in government and understanding what government is and what is the state and the rules of engagement within the family, and therefore the question of trust and the trust that we need to have within ourselves, that we are able to do what we're doing. I sit here sometimes very scared that the trust that was established by the minister in placing one into this position should not become fragmented in how one approaches it. And therefore, one works with the Progressive Women's Movement, one works with the SAWIT, one works with Sengoku, and say, how do we put all these structures at the disposal of our government so that we can effectively deliver ourselves from poverty? And that means it requires education. Because a young activist said to me, what kind of poverty are you talking about in your country? Is it the stomach or which one? So I was confused. I didn't understand. Poverty is poverty. You're hungry. And he says, no, you need to feed the mind, so that the mind can feed the stomach. And that's why I think ECD is so important for us, that we need to start right there in the mindset that needs to be changed for young children to begin to understand the trust that is they are empowered with. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Khan. Thank you very much to the Chairperson of the Board in your board meetings yesterday, and also the CEO of the NDA and team, but also the Deputy Minister of Social Development, Maria Ntuli. Thank you very much for your presence and your participation in this committee meeting. And also the honourable members, two of the members left us because of that urgent engagement, but we've been sitting since Tuesday, right through. So thank you very much, members, also for your diligence and your commitment. We will be compiling our report to Parliament. It's been a very interesting engagement, and we hope that the report of this committee will be taken seriously by the NDA and also by the Minister, the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, honourable members, NDA, Deputy Minister, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Saturday and Sunday.
Thank you.